Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kira Mode, and I'm here with Codameron.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about the particulars of the Vault Warrior series. We just did the Worlds talk. The Vault Warrior talk is going to be a very different conversation.
So, for those of you who aren't aware, then where have you been? Living under a rock? Vault Warrior is the high competitive tournament series that FFG has announced for Keyforge. And it is, there's a lot of talk about this. The big headline is that there's going to be a bunch of qualifiers with prize pools of $10,000. And then there's a championship with a prize pool of $100,000, which means that if you win these, you could walk away with some serious cash. And that comes with a lot of other effects that just when you put cash into an event, that means it's more serious. They're going to put more thought into these tournaments. There's going to be attracting new players, more competitive players. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that Bouncing Death Kirk has been trying to train you for, it's these high-level competitive events.
Yeah. So let's lead off with the three types of events that they have. So it's Vault Warrior Tryouts, Vault Warrior Qualifiers, and then Vault Warrior Championships. So leading off Tryouts, we've read the document a couple times. They're pretty much meaningless. Anyone can have a Vault Warrior Tryout. It doesn't really get you anything financially. And it doesn't get you any advantage competitively in the next levels.
What it does is it's basically like a sword championship, which is nice to say, hey, look, I'm playing in a Vault Warrior type thing. I'm sure there's going to be cool prizes and prize support, maybe fancy decks or fancy tokens or something. Mm-hmm. But the actual prize is, hey, look, you get your free ticket into a Vault Warrior qualifier, which if we're reading this right, you could have just bought your way into anyway. Yeah. So it's not like it's actually qualifying you for the qualifier, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I say we just kind of table that entire conversation. Let's go to the Vault Warrior qualifiers, which is that is the thing that they have the most detail on in this document. Like they wanted to be as like relatively clear as they could for this. So there's going to be different formats. What is very clear about the Vault Warrior qualifier is that it is going to be limited to three sets. They haven't said when these events are, but as long as these events are after May of 2020, which is likely considering that Worlds will be in May of 2020, they probably don't want to be starting these Vault Warrior qualifiers before Worlds.
They might. They could start them in March or April. We don't know.
Possibly, but the big thing that this means is that Coda will almost certainly not be legal for a lot of these events. And that may not matter because a lot of these events are going to have different formats, right? Like, so some of them will be adaptive, right? And like adaptive in these formats seems like insane.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the formats in a second because it's wild. But there's one thing to note is there's only 10 of these qualifiers that they're going to have, right? There's only 10 of these opportunities to win this $10,000 prize pool, which is $2,500 for the winner, which is still great. Mm-hmm. But then it will also qualify you for the championships, right? The top 32 of the qualifiers get qualified for the championships. And then to play in the championships, so that's what, a possible 320 people, which really looks like 200 people with all the overlap. And then there's a last chance qualifier at the championships. You show up, you play a grueling day, and then the championships is this current set only adaptive. It'll be in Miami, I think it said. And then who knows what that format's going to be? Who knows how long it's going to last? And I think they don't know either. That's why they did tell us, hey, it's Archon of the current set, which will probably be set 4 by that time. And it'll be adaptive of some sort format. So I don't know what we can even talk about that tournament, except for it's going to be very competitive, very well attended, and very well watched.
Yeah, my guess is that, so if you look at the Vault Warrior qualifiers, the event is very convoluted. And I would guess that the championship is similarly convoluted. They just haven't figured out exactly how they're going to do it. All right, but let's jump into the actual events. So Vault Warrior qualifiers, 3-day event, right? That is different from all the vault tours we've seen so far, because the vault tours are specifically 2-day events.
Even if there's a day 1A and a day 1B, you've only got to play in one of those days, and it's a 2-day event for you.
Yeah, this is specifically a 3-day event. Like, you will presumably be playing like 6, 7, maybe 8 rounds day 1, playing the same amount of rounds day 2, and then the cut is day 3.
Right.
Which is something that, like, Fantasy Flight hasn't really done before, to have that much requirements.
So the format is that these formats, there's a even like a soft rotation, because KeyForge has said, hey, look, the vault tours, you can always bring your codex. They'll be evergreen. They'll never rotate. But the Vault Warriors, this is their first attempt at actually adding that sort of rotation in. Day one is an Archon. It might be adaptive, triad, solo.
Let's assume it's just straight Archon, right? Like, okay. So we'll talk about the format from the assumption that it's single game Archon.
Sure. But you can only bring the current set. So that's what? Yeah. Worlds Collide or whatever set 4 is?
Well, no, set 4 is going to be like, well, we'll just say set 4 because Worlds Collide set 3.
Right.
All right, so day one's going to be set 4, right? It has to be a set 4 deck for day 1. And then the way I think almost everyone has read day 2 is that day 2, they have this 2-deck elimination, which is a little bit weird. It's not my favorite wording for a format, but Kodan, maybe you can explain it better than I can.
Yeah, it works similar to the Sealed Triad. So you show up, you bring 2 decks of the 2 previous sets, one of each of the 2 previous sets. So let's say I bring an AOA and a Worlds Collide deck. Yep. So I walk up and I've got my purple deck, I've got my blue deck. And I look at my opponent's purple deck and my opponent's blue deck, going by the boxes here. Yeah. And I say, hey, that's a Grump Buggy deck. I don't want to play against your AOA deck. So I will ban that. Now, for our match, let's say it's Archon, now we play a game and I play my deck that you didn't ban against your purple deck because I didn't ban your purple deck.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just what it is. It's just you bring 2 decks of specific sets, and then you ban one. And then you play the game.
So when we talk about, like, we'll do an episode on Triad, and maybe we mix in a little bit of this, but, like, it is strange because your opponent gets to choose what deck you play, but you got to choose what deck your opponent gets to play, which is a little bit strange. But the key thing here is that they have to be different sets. Like, it's very clear that you cannot bring 2 Worlds Collide decks or 2 AOA decks. It's one of each. And the reason this is relevant is that day 3, so it's Archon, it's player choice, but it's player choice of the 3 decks. So when you go to this event, you're expected to bring 1 deck from each of the previous 3 sets.
So yeah, you've shown up with 3 different decks, but remember, the day 1 and the day 2, you actually tally up your score somehow cumulatively from both of those days. And the best X players, maybe the best top 32 of all those players, will make it to day 3, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's so interesting about this set. You can bomb day 1 and win day 2 and still make it to the top 32.
My guess is, because so they said top 32, right?
Yep.
I would suspect that you would probably need to go combined, typically, say 5-1 for each day. So you could probably go like 4-2 day 1 and then like 6-0 day 2.
We don't know that. It could be weighted. You could get more points for winning and then you go, 3-3 the other day and then you make it? Or you go 2-4 and then win and then you make it?
I would also expect that it would probably be more than 6 rounds per day. Unless it's the adaptive. So this is the thing too. So we talked about this in terms of Archon. It gets a little bit wonkier when you have, because they said it can it could just be solo Archon. It could also be reversal. It could be triad.
If it's triad, are you bringing 9 decks? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, so the triad is strange. Like I actually don't know how they're going to do that.
And I'm sure we'll have more information about it later. And this is all speculative, but let's focus back on the competitive. What's interesting about this is it makes all of the cards that we have currently, like right now, maybe the Coda cards, if they have a March thing and they don't have set 4 at, then all the cards now that we have suddenly have weirdly more value, right? I personally expect this to actually do a lot for the secondary market. I think that acquiring strong decks has been a thing where you win Vault Tours, and you know that's fun. You know, you get prizes, you get swag, but I think that this event, once you put a dollar sign and a prize pool of this size on an event. This will actually attract more players, and more, maybe some serious Magic players will jump into this game, and people will start throwing reasonable amount of money at decks because they think that they can actually get a return on their investment.
Yeah, so another aspect of this too is that, so when you think about Vault Tours are only two-day events. They're typically Saturday, Sunday events. You don't need to take much time off. When it comes to those, people could cherry pick, like, okay, what's the right date? When can I get cheaper plane tickets? Who do I have family in which cities or friends that I can maybe bum a couch off of, right? Like there's ways to trim costs so that you can go to more Vault Tours. That becomes a lot harder with the Vault Warrior qualifiers because it's a three-day event. So you're going to have to spend more time. And there's only 10 of them. So it's going to be much harder to cherry pick the right spots. So people will be investing significantly more dollars to go to these events. And also, they're going to be investing more time, which means the decision of, like, I know a lot of people that I've met at Vault Tours, including myself, are, like, allergic to spending money online. Like, I have, like, a functional $50 cap on any deck I would ever consider buying, and I don't really ever hit that cap. If I were looking at the budget, and it's going to cost me, like, $600 or $700 to go to, like, a Vault Warrior qualifier.
Between the flight and between the hotel.
Yeah, and, like, food and whatnot.
And paying to play in the event.
If it were similar to, say, Gen Con, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where you have to pay a lot of money for the event, you have to pay a lot of money for the flight, pay a lot of money for the hotel. Now, Gen Con was different because I was primarily doing L5R. But, like, if I'm investing that much, all of a sudden paying $300 for a deck looks a lot more palatable.
I would say 150.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. And especially when you factor in the prize pool, too. So if I know that I have a decent chance to get my money back, again, I'm going to be more willing to spend money on these decks. And, like, that's where the competition level is going to drive up a lot.
And I think another factor of this is the fact that it's such an emphasis on the current set. When Coda just came out, it was a new thing. But when sets come out, we don't know what's good. But, you know, all the horsemen look really cool because they're all special. When the current set drops in, let's say, in May, and there's a Vault Tour, there's a Vault Championship in a Vault Warrior thing in June, everyone's going to scramble for the best decks by their perception. I can throw some sort of fancy-looking special card combo deck up there for $300, and Danny here is going to buy that like a sucker, right? Because we don't know what the set looks like. We don't have a lot of experience with it, and what looks good, what people perceive to be good, will happen. So I want to put a note out there that you shouldn't just buy into the hype when it happens. When these sets come out, if you're trying to go to these qualifiers or even this championship, do your testing, do your research, proxy some cards, play these games on the Crucible. Really, if you're going to spend the money on the deck, don't just look at that $2,500 prize pool, because that could be a $0 prize pool if you just scrub out in day one and two.
I would say, like, you want to make sure you're fully prepped. So, like, me personally, the one that I would want to go to is the adaptive one. Because, like, that, I mean, while that is the hardest, it also is the least financially restrictive for, you know, for the actual decks themselves. Because, like, having a good adaptive deck is very different from having a good Archon deck. And that's where it's like, okay, I would personally target that for myself. But, like, there are people who, like, they just have functionally limitless cash, right? If that's you, you probably want to do the Archon events. Because, like, you can take more chances, right? You can buy all of the combo decks and then just play them.
Your favorite ones.
Yeah, and then maybe they don't pan out. Who cares? Like, you just buy another one. You can just take more chances.
I don't think anyone has limitless cash.
Limitless relative to...
I don't think Jeff Bezos is coming down to the Vault Warrior qualifiers.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, like, you've seen it at these, like, Vault Tours. There's a very clear distinction between people who are there because they want to play in the event and they play with what they have, and people who are there, they're like, hey, I'm out here, like, really balling out to make sure I try to win these things.
And to come full circle, this Vault Warrior series is going to bring those hardcore players, those really invested players who want that big prize win to this game.
We should talk about the atmosphere.
That's what this set's gonna do. That this this Vault Warrior tournament is going to make a very different atmosphere than a Vault Champion, a Vault Tour, or even Worlds. Like, we talk about Worlds being this friendly thing with your friends. This is not going to be that.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to make many friendships at the Vault Warrior qualifiers. Because I just think the amount of people that are going to be there that are, like, super serious and only trying to win is going to be much higher. There's not going to be any takebacks allowed. Like, so I would expect zero friendly play. I would expect people to try to angle shoot wins. Like, just every bad thing that you think about.
You called Mars. You can't go to Shadows now.
Exactly. Like things like that. People will 100% try to game the system because it's just different when there's cash involved. And if that's not for you, then it's not for you. I mean, like, we talked about Worlds, and Worlds, we expect the atmosphere to be very friendly, very fun. We expect you to make a lot of friends. The Vault Warrior qualifiers is just going to be people trying to kill each other. Which, look, a lot of people like that. Like, a lot of people go to these events wanting to kill people, but, like, you have to understand that's what it is.
Yeah, and try not to take it personally. I mean, there's some people who it brings out the worst in them. But on the whole, people are still here to have, you know, we're here to play a game, right? This isn't a job for anyone. This is, we're here to have a good time. But I think the biggest distinction is that after a long day of fun play, you want to go out and have drinks with your friends. After a long day of this, and you have day two and day three maybe to look forward to, you're going to want to go home, get some sleep, eat a good meal, maybe play a couple games at home, and kind of regroup with just the people you came with. It's not going to be about, let's go out and have a good time. This is a battle.
Well, so here's the thing. I know at Vault Tours, there are some players who, after the Vault Tour is over, they go with their friends and they have drinks. Other people, after, or like day one, right? So there's some people day one, they go have drinks, and then they just show up for the cut. Other people, after day one, they are practicing, like hardcore practicing at night in prep for the cut. Everyone at the Vault Tour qualifiers are going to be like the former, or sorry, the latter, where it's like they are practicing, like they're going as hard as possible to do it. And it's not a for fun event. And then like the Vault Warrior Championship, while we don't have a ton of info, is going to be very similar to that, where people are just going to be going as hard as they can because there's so much at stake. Because, I mean, again, also like even the non-cash part, top 32 qualify, right? There's not going to be, I wouldn't expect anyone to concede either.
It's entirely reasonable that on day one you could go 2-4, day two you win it, and then you squeak in at 29th place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's also not over after day one, which actually does kind of feel kind of good.
Yeah. I would just say that like there's going to be just such a high intensity level for this event that it's going to throw a lot of Keyforge players off.
Well, yeah, but just to wrap this up, the last note I want to make is that this is a big thing for Keyforge. This is a big milestone. Whenever a game makes that step into saying, okay, are we ready? Cash prize. Big cash prize. Let's make it a spectacle. Let's make it a thing. You know that they're serious. This is going to be, I'm sure the judging is going to be better. The organization's hopefully going to be great.
Yeti's been really
trying to put Keyforge on the map. And this is the big step that you take. And I'm excited to see Keyforge taking this step. It's a thing you have to be watching out for as a player, but as a fan of the game, you should love this, even if you can't go.
Yeah, and I don't know how much, notice Duncan got. Duncan's the leader of the Yeti organization, but it's kind of like between, like, if you look at Cascade versus Yeti and how they organize the events. Cascade, very lax on a lot of things. Yeti is very on top of it. I would say the most surprising thing that the Yeti does is the way that they do the time structure for... So if you haven't been to a Vault Tour with Yeti, here's how they do it. The time and the round. Most people, when they go to a Keyforge event, they just like put their deck on their table and they immediately give their Archon card to their opponent. People review it for roughly 2 minutes and they give it back. That is not how Yeti does it. You sit down, you are not allowed to look at anything from your opponent until they start the clock. When they start the clock, you give them your Archon card, you get exactly 2 minutes. And then you cannot look at your first hand until that 2 minute clock is done. And then you can actually, like, you know, start like dealing out your hands and stuff. Like, they're very strict on that.
Doing that this way is going to be really important for these people trying to angle shoot in the qualifiers. If it was lax, like you say Cascade was, hey, look, this guy got to look at my deck for 3 minutes. That's not fair. That would happen. But I'm happy to hear that Yeti's doing that. I'm happy to hear that KeyForge is taking these steps now in the Vault Tours to make sure that when we get to these Vault Warrior events, that we have that level of seriousness, competitiveness, and people are going to respect this tournament. People are going to see this game. Magic players, Yu-Gi-Oh players, Pokemon players, long-term card players, hopefully we'll see KeyForge as the next big game. And that's really all of our hopes, right?
Yeah, we want to see the game grow and do the best that it can. But yeah, that's really what we have on the Vault Warrior series for now. I'm Kirima, that's Kodamarin. We are on social media. So if you want to catch us, we are at DeathQuark on either Facebook or Twitter. Through either of our social medias, you can find an invite to our Discord channel. Discord is the easiest way to contact one of us directly. Also, via our Discord, you can find a link to our online store. So our online store has shirts and sweaters and whatnot, so you can fly our colors at different events and show your support for the show that way. And lastly, if you want more content, Kodamarin has his own YouTube channel. And through there, he does streams every now and again of himself playing. We do coverage of certain events, so you can hear us do commentary. And it's just a good way to get more content of BDQ in your life. So yeah, tell your friends about the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.